of the product?
Everything that we do is a cascaded approach. So, for instance, in our loudspeaker range, we develop the reference one first, and then everything, reference two, three, four, and now the Evo range have cascaded that technology down from that.
O convidado deste episódio do podcast Música e Som foi exposto ao bichinho da reprodução de música em vinil quando ouviu tocar um giradiscos feito por um amigo em 1977, quando tinha 16 anos. Mais tarde, Konrad Maas comprou o aparelho ao amigo e a partir daí ficou obcecado em melhorar a qualidade sonora da sua reprodução. Assim começou o seu objetivo em criar o melhor giradiscos possível, que culminou na criação da empresa AVID, ou A Very Interesting Design, em 1995, e a apresentação do giradiscos de referência Actus 4 anos mais tarde. Atualmente, a AVID Hi-Fi fabrica todos os componentes necessários para um sistema completo de reprodução analógica, desde as cabeças para os seus giradiscos, passando pelo pretfono e amplificador integrado, até às colunas de som.
Este episódio é patrocinado por Ultimate Audio, a sua loja de referência na alta fidelidade nacional. Visite-nos em Lisboa, no Porto ou em ultimate-audio.eu.
So, Konrad, thank you for being with us.
Pleasure, nice to be here in Portugal.
All right, so can you please introduce yourself?
So, I'm Konrad Maas, I'm the CEO and founder of AVID Hi-Fi, a high-end audio company based in England.
Okay, thank you. So please tell us how you started to listen music and into getting into hi-fi.
When I was very, very young, when my parents thought I was going to bed, I was lying in my bed with a small transistor radio and an earbud running through with a wire going to it, listening to a pirate radio station called Caroline. And I used to go to sleep and pretend I was asleep when my parents would look in. And so I used to like listening to music. I recall my first record that I ever bought was a pop group called Wizard. From then, I was then introduced when I was about 16 to a record player that a friend of mine had built as a kit turntable. And I listened to that. I didn't think it was particularly good, and I told him that, which crushed him a little bit. After a few months, he decided that he wanted to pass it on, and I bought it from him. And it's like every hobby, it becomes all consuming and you just want to learn all about it and everything. So I just started a mission of learning everything there was to do with turntables, and that resulted in me basically going to reference libraries and looking at other products and everything. After a few years, I sort of arrogantly thought everyone's got it wrong. Started with a blank sheet of paper, and 20 years later developed the Acutus turntable, which is the bedrock of all of our products in terms of its design philosophy and certain aspects of it. And a lot of the theory that's in that product relates to everything else that we do, whether it be a speaker or an amplifier or anything. And from that turntable we've prolificated into a company that makes, you know, everything from turntables to loudspeakers.
Okay. So in this case, so you started from the top to bottom. So when you developed your first product, it was what it is today. First iteration, obviously, but it was what it is today. Your top of the line product.
Absolutely.
And then from there, you developed the rest of the product.
So everything that we do is a cascaded approach. So for instance, in our loudspeaker range, we develop the reference one first, and then everything, reference two, three, four, and now the Evo range have cascaded that technology down from that. The whole reason that I have that approach is a lot of hi-fi firms, to start as a business, they enter the market with an economical product.
Exactly.
And to do that, to make an economical product, is very difficult. You have to make compromises both in the design and the quality. And once that product's established, people generally say, oh, could you make something better? At which they build on that compromised product and try and make something better. So it's a bit like you build a bungalow and then someone says, oh, I want to build another floor, and you don't have the foundations that are capable of building another floor, the building isn't going to be very well supported. Whereas what we do is we develop the very best that we can. We devise a technology and a philosophy and everything, and then we cascade that product down, keeping the core elements of that product all the way through the range. But we economise on materials or whatever it is, but we try and keep the sound quality as good as we can within that price budget. How that manifests itself in terms of how you listen is the majority of companies, when you listen going up their range, you get what's called diminishing returns, where they're trying to eke out that little bit extra out of a compromised product.
Yeah.
Whereas with us, if you go up the range, you don't get diminishing returns. Literally, it will be a lot more sound quality than the price that you're going to get. And that's because we're keeping the essence of the design and everything intact within the product.
I see. So, but you were saying earlier that, so you just look into the market and decided I can do better. What convinced you that, in terms of turntable, because it was your first product, what convinced you that the existing designs from what are today your competitors,
yep,
were lacking, and where do you think you could add value from your philosophy or a different approach or whatever you decide?
So I think the first thing to get across is that when I started, I had no pretense of starting a company or anything. I was basically developing a product for my own personal use. And when I started looking at turntables, which was the first thing that I looked at, the first thing I noticed is that they all had specifications. You could look in the back of what hi-fi, and they all had the same sort of rumble figures, they had the same sort of wone flutter figures, they both did 33 and 45, they both did this, they both did that, which was pretty much all the same.
So they were defined by its...
Its sound was drastically different. So, you know, a direct drive Technics would sound completely different to an LP12 Lin, for instance. So what I then looked at was, well, what is actually causing that difference? And what I came by was the fact it's the record itself and the noise actually within the record itself, and how the turntable reacted, or how the record reacted to the surface that it was sat on, that was making that sound difference. Now, a record is essentially a bit like a cymbal. I mean, you can make them wobble and you can make a noise with them. And the record is picking up vibration, everything from a hand clap to, you know, noise within the room, to, and it's picking up the speakers, making the noise, and it's actually having noise injected into it by the fact that the cartridge is tracking in the groove. So it's that creates bad vibration within the record, and that bad vibration is affecting what you hear as the good vibration. Everything about what we do, and this is where I say it's a philosophy, where we create paths of least resistance, where we can channel that bad vibration away so you only get to hear the good vibration. And we do that in amplifiers, speakers, and in turntables. And in all of our turntables.
So it's a philosophy that you took from the turntable, but now you apply
to everything.
Everything.
Exactly. So within the turntables, we have a unique bearing system, which is a true one single point bearing system. It has no lateral movement. The majority of turntables have a bearing which does something called precessioning, which it runs on a flat plate, which is what causes rumble and speed instability. With our turntable, it's a captive point bearing, so it has no lateral movement, mm-hmm. and there's no noise. But the materials we use and the way we use them, we actually use the bearing to ground the record so that the vibration within the record is transmitted away from the record and down into the chassis. So the record has a much lower noise floor than on a conventional turntable. Now, it's really easy to prove, because if you play the leading groove on a turntable, you should hear nothing. It's a silent groove. There's nothing on there, no modulation, nothing. You don't hear anything on a
CD.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
So why is it then that you put the record on the leading groove?
You can hear it.
You turn the volume up to about 10 o'clock and you hear the noise and you think that's about right. On an Avid turntable, you can take that same volume probably up to 2 o'clock before you hear the same level of noise. So the noise floor in the record itself is much lower. And because the noise floor is lower, you get to hear more of the music, you hear more of the acoustic, the dynamics start and stop more accurately, there's a better tempo to the music, more definition, and vocals and that are much clearer, much more definition. Okay, so that was the first thing I really established as being the characteristic difference. I'll be honest, I think most turntable designers just ignore that whole fact of the record because they can't really do much about it, or they don't do much about it.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past, there've been people who have used plastic platters with the notion that the vibration dissipates into the plastic platter. That just doesn't happen, because to do that, the material has to be exactly the same. And even if it does do it, you get saturation where you have a problem where the whole platter then just becomes one vibrating mass. If the record's on a felt mat, it's essentially like a bed of air, it's unrestricted and it just flaps around. Okay, so it's much better to have a controlled surface where the vibration in the record is evacuated out of the record, lowering the noise floor, so you get to hear more of the music. So that was the first thing that I really worked out. From there, you need to protect that whole assembly from the outside world, from footfall and whatever. There's two types of suspension within turntables. You either have no suspension, which is turntables like Clear Audio, VPI, people like this, where the notion is that, well, if the turntable moves, the arm moves, the cartridge moves, no harm done. The problem is the cartridge is a spring, it's designed to move and it detects vibration. So if the whole mass is moving, it's going to move out of sequence of what it's supposed to do, and it will distort the signal. So a sprung suspension is far better than magnets or air bellows or this sort of type of thing, because a spring is a beautiful thing. It has a defined frequency of which it's its natural frequency. Everything below that frequency, the spring sees as rigid, so any vibration comes straight into the system. Everything above that frequency is absorbed and doesn't go into the system. So obviously, logically, the thing is to make that frequency as low as possible. So on the Acutus turntable, it's 2.5 hertz. Now there's a reason it's 2.5 hertz. A cartridge, the arm compliance frequency of the cartridge is from 5 to 15 hertz. These days it's probably between 10 to 15, 5 is really, really low. Mm-hmm. At 2.5 hertz, even the second harmonic is below the lowest cartridge compliance frequency. Now, just like on a spring of a turntable where it is rigid below that frequency, on a cartridge, the cartridge is rigid below that optimum frequency. So essentially, a cartridge below 10 hertz, for instance, is coupled rigidly to the record. So if the suspension is moving and absorbing everything below that frequency, the turntable can be moving, the cartridge doesn't even know it's moving. It is fixed rigidly to the thing and it's isolating everything. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So by having that low isolation frequency, it means the cartridge is properly protected. But if only life was that simple.
It never is.
The problem is you've got three or more springs generally in a turntable. The problem with all other turntables is that they use a fixed spring in these turntables, and the weight, the mass on each of those springs is different because you've got the arm out in a different position, or you might change the arm to a heavier arm or a lighter arm or whatever. And the problem is with a different weight on each spring, the frequency of the spring changes. So you get a turntable which moves up and down and then wobbles, and moves up and down and then it wobbles, okay? The beauty of our suspension system is that you can actually adjust each spring independently regardless of the load. So regardless of what arm, no arm at all, you can balance the turntable so each spring is exactly the same frequency. So you get a perfect pistonic bounce up and down, which is what the cartridge doesn't see, because it's straight up and down. A turntable that wobbles, the cartridge then wobbles, and you get a false signal that the cartridge is reading and it mistracks and everything. Mm-hmm. On our system, where you can tune each spring independently, you get an absolutely perfect bounce and the cartridge doesn't even know it's moving.
But this tuning is made at the factory, or no, can be user...
No, absolutely, it's user done. If you're a customer and you decide to change the arm, or even take arm off and no arm at all, you can balance the turntable so it's absolutely just bounces perfectly up and down with no wobble movement at all.
Your product line is strictly analog. Do you think it still is the ultimate way for the best music reproduction?
Straight answer to that is yes. because noise, by virtue, is a constant tone. It's a constant sine wave. And digital just takes that and cuts it up into however number of pieces you want to break it up into. Yes, it is the ultimate way to reproduce music properly. Now, if you're a fan of digital, you will obviously say, well, it doesn't have the dynamic range. It doesn't have various other attributes that digital might have. But that's like saying, I've got a Ferrari and it will do 200 miles an hour, but I only drive at 10 miles an hour because the traffic's so bad. So why do you need a car with such a dynamic range if you only use the bit in the middle? And with the majority of music, it's all about what's in the middle. Very, very little music goes to the real extremes of the frequency range. So, and with analog, there's a purity about the sound, which I think, despite the number of bits that you can cut it up with digital, you can hear. And how that manifests itself, to my mind, is most people, when they listen to digital, they listen to the first, not very much of the first track, and they skip. And then they listen and they skip. Whereas with analog, people tend to put the music on and they listen to the whole musical piece. Now, that's not to say that I don't think digital has its place. I personally think digital should have been the replacement for the cassette tape, because you can record on it, it's portable, it's ideal for moving around. But I think that digital is almost like the McDonald's of music. It's fast, you can just go and grab it when you want, you can have it as background music, you can just put it on, you can stream it, it's much more user friendly. Whereas analog is more like fine dining, where you sit down and it's an occasion and you listen to something, and
it's a ritual.
It's a ritual.
Yeah.
But it's something which can have a much greater impact on you, both emotionally and make you more involved within the music, rather than it, or it's almost just background music. It's a bit like if you go to, if you have a party with some friends and you have some background music, but you take that same scenario and you go to a live club or a venue, it's very, very difficult to talk with people and just have a chit chat with people when you've got live music happening, because it has that dynamic, almost tangibility about it that just grabs you and makes it very, very difficult not to get involved in it.
Yeah.
It's interesting you're talking about cassettes. Do you anticipate the resurgence of other analog media, such as cassettes or reel-to-reel?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because reel-to-reel has come back. Mm-hmm. There is a market of people buying reel-to-reels, rebuilding reel-to-reel machines.
Yeah, we've seen Revox just
there you go.
Relaunched the B77.
Yep. Yes. So reel-to-reels is definitely a thing. There is definitely a sound quality about it that is very, very good. I think there's a market also for the visual effect of it as well, a bit like a record player, seeing it go around.
Drama.
And the drama of seeing the spools go round and things like that.
Yeah.
Would you consider it to make such a machine?
Okay. No. People often ask, are we ever going to do anything digital? And the answer is no. So you're
comfortable in doing turntables as the source?
Absolutely, yes. And I would say that there's a lot more that turntables can deliver. There's no way that we're getting anywhere approachable what is on a record, coming out through your loudspeakers. So if you go to a recording studio, for instance, and there's obviously lots of people that will be in the digital camp and lots of people in the analog camp, they'll go around with a burning cross and all the rest of it. If you go to a recording studio and you listen to a high quality digital recording and a high quality analog recording, you have to be a bat to basically hear any difference between them. They are absolutely amazing,
because they are both state of the art.
Exactly. The big problem is when you take that and then you put it onto either a vinyl record or a CD, the quality absolutely plummets. And you can see that within records, when you can do direct cut discs, for instance. There's other people who do other types of recording format now on vinyl record, and you can see a big improvement in the sound quality. And so the actual format of the record itself has got a lot of legs in it yet to be able to be improved. And the thing about a record player, that's got ultimately, with time, with materials and various other things that will always come out, there'll be improvements there. It's a bit like saying, well, a few hundred years ago we made the Model T Ford, and look what a current car can do now. It's totally different. And the turntable is a mechanical device which, with technology and various other things, will improve over time. A digital is a zero and a one, and there's not really much you can do about that. And any changes within digital reproduction is normally done in the analog side of things, where improvements are made, rather than, well, you can't make a change on a zero and a one. That's what it is. So but we're keeping firmly within analog, because if you want to lose money, go into digital.
It's funny you're saying that, because most people just love the earlier decks.
Yep.
From Philips and so on. So because they say that the sound is more analog, the sound of those decks.
Yeah, sometime. I mean, I remember the first CDs machines, and to be honest with you, I remember them being quite harsh.
Yes. And they were 14-bit in resolution.
Yes.
The first decks. They weren't even 16-bit.
Yes. I mean, you know, then
and they were pretty harsh in the
absolutely.
In the treble. Yeah.
And I mean, then came out things like the Meridian CD Pro, which was a nice machine. I always remember the Cambridge CD1 that came out. That was an amazing thing at the time.
And expensive at the time.
Yes, I mean, I was in the process of developing a turntable at the time, and thought, well, that's me finished then. but I carried on, and here I am today, and CDs now disappearing, and vinyl is coming back.
It's true, but also, again, speaking about your turntable, so you're developing this for 20 years now? More or less.
I developed the Acutus that took 20 years.
Okay.
Of a parallel life, wasn't doing it full time. And then next year is our 30th year in business since launching the Acutus. Okay.
So, but you can obviously all the R&D that was put into this. And this is a process, obviously, but you can imagine still a long way to go in terms of how more refined can a turntable be.
Yeah, so, well, I think...
I mean, right now in this moment of your company, you no longer only develop the turntable, so... You have also the pre-phono, the harm, also the cartridges. So you right now, you have all the components that go into a turntable.
Yes.
So you are in an excellent position to know where more thought, more engineering can be put in terms of developing this further.
Yes.
And where are these points?
That's quite interesting what you say there, because what I tend to do is try and, when we do a design, especially the top of the range product, I design it to be perfect. Now that might sound a bit presumptuous or whatever, but to put that in context, the Acutus today gets rave reviews, you know, one of the best turntables in the world. And over the past 30 years, there's lots of other turntables that have come and gone. There's lots of other turntables that have had numerous upgrades and changes and improvements and modifications. This hasn't changed at all in 30 years. So if you design something right, it stands the test of time, and people should be kicking themselves because they could have bought this 30 years ago for a lot less money.
Yeah.
So a good analogy would be, we're all men here, the fly zip in your trousers. There isn't a 2.0 fly zip that comes out, because that just works. It's perfect every time, doesn't have a problem, and it's an excellent design, and there's no need to improve it. Where I see possibly the Acutus improving over time is where there's a development in materials or technology which makes things, improves things.
Like a better technology for the motor?
Yes, possibly. That's it. So, but in 30 years that hasn't happened, and we don't see anything on the horizon yet that is going to change anything about its design.
Okay. So do you build everything in-house in the UK?
Yes. So we have two factories in the UK based near Cambridge. We have all our own CNC machines, and we basically pop machine all the metal work from raw material. The electronic component boards are all hand populated and hand soldered by hand. We do all the assembly work in-house. We test everything. Everything is generally tested for 2 weeks. We extensively do drop testing and things like that on each product. Basically because it's more profitable to make sure it works when it gets to where it's supposed to be rather than make sure it doesn't work and then bring it all the way back. Yeah. Customers are generally more happy about that as well. So, but yes, we do.
How do you see the actual European hi-fi industry regarding the competition from China and Asia?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Elaborate, in what way? Competition.
Yeah, are the European manufacturers like you in trouble because of the products from China and from Asia in general?
I think there's in the audio world there's an association that Britain and America make probably the best audiophile products. Germany has got a good few brands as well. I think I don't really perceive there's anything really coming from Asia that is going to compete with that, which is one of the reasons why the China market and Taiwanese market is very good for, if you like, Western products.
Yeah.
They also want to buy Western products because of the perceived value rather than products made in China.
So it's like an aspirational
absolutely yes
product for
yes.
them.
Okay. Yes. I think that China is a developing nation is coming on, but I don't really see anything revolutionary in terms of design or anything that is novel. I think there's still that, dare I say it, copy what's going on elsewhere, but try and make it cheaper or something. There's obviously Chinese products that are designed by people outside of China and then they're made in China for the cheapness. Although I see that changing because China's got a big problem at the moment where, as opposed to some countries where it used to be super rich and super poor and nothing in the middle, now they've got a huge middle class.
They do.
And they're spending money all around the world and going on holiday, which is great. Yeah. But now a lot of their manufacturing is moving to places like Vietnam, Thailand. So, you know, I think you'll probably see eventually manufacturing will move to those countries if you want something done inexpensively. At the moment though, shipping is a big problem, the cost of shipping. I mean, it's come down a lot since COVID, but there's a lot of companies who are now looking to do manufacturing within their own country. I know that's going on a lot in England, and I think lots of European countries now are looking to bring manufacturing closer to home, because it's a lot less viable to do it in China or, you know, far away.
Yeah.
And also, if you're...
So even if they lose, so to speak, money in the manufacturing process, they will recover that in transportation costs because it's basically there.
Well, I think there's two things. One, you have increased cost when you're manufacturing at home, but it's not as expensive than if you were shipping all the parts from China. But I think what a lot of people need to think about though, there's certain products that are driven by price, but for most people, hi-fi equipment what we need to think about is that there's two things. There's needs and wants. And no one needs hi-fi. They want hi-fi.
Yeah,
and people will pay for what they want more so than possibly what they need. So, and to many customers, the perception that it is made on the cheap in China, it doesn't sit well with them, and they'd rather buy.
It affects negatively the perception of the product quality, even if it's the same quality.
So they would rather know that it's manufactured, like for us, for instance, it's all manufactured within our factory. We take total control of everything, and it's all done, you know, within our own facility. And with that, we can guarantee the quality, the longevity of the product, and everything much more so than if it's made far away. And I know, particularly in, say, electronics, for instance, if a component runs out, it could be a critical component to do with sound quality, but the operations manager in that Chinese factory will just go and buy a component that will do the same thing, and all of a sudden you've got a product that doesn't sound how it's supposed to sound, and they've already made 10,000 of them before someone pushes the button to say that's not right. So, but that's just the way things are in terms of shipping and things like that. We're not really in that arena in terms of product. Our products are, I wouldn't say artisan, but they're manufactured in our own facility, primarily because I like to keep absolute total control. Nine times out of 10, if you get someone else to do something for you, it goes wrong. You can almost guarantee it. So it's better to have it in our own control. So if it does go wrong, we've only got ourselves to blame. But because we're doing...
And you can then iterate on it.
Absolutely, instantly.
And get it right.
But because we're doing the same thing all the time, then, you know, I mean, we've been making the components for this for 30 years. You know, we know exactly, down to microns, how exactly it should be, and the components that fit with it, exactly how it should be. And, you know, there's certain manufacturers of turntables, for instance, where if you was to lose the bearing, for instance, you would get a new one from the manufacturer, and the chances are it's not going to fit, it won't fit with the platter, it won't, because of whatever reason. Someone could come to us with a turntable that's 30 years old, and I can just replace any component in it, and it will absolutely fit.
Even the bearings?
Absolutely.
You are doing the bearings yourselves?
Yes.
Well,
that's quality control. Then right.
Yeah. So, and do, in terms of your personal life, do you listen to music at home? Do you still have the time for that ritual that we were talking about at the beginning?
Okay, so it'd be really great to say, yeah, I've got a wonderful hi-fi system at home.
But you don't.
I don't, no. I've got a very ununderstanding wife. And some years ago, we had I was lucky enough to have a big extension on the house where we have a very big lounge, and the hi-fi with big glass walls and hard floors doesn't really go very well. And I've got a wonderful factory with a big demonstration room that I can go and listen to music when I want to. It's really interesting because if you go and speak to someone who works at a Ferrari dealership or something, or a Porsche dealership or something, they're probably driving home in a Skoda, and they've got no interest in cars or anything like that.
But you do have interest.
I have an interest in it, and I've got my toy shop where I can do everything from machining to, like we said earlier, 3D printing to graphic design. We do our own videos in-house. We do everything all in-house. And if I want to listen to some music, then I'll go down the road, which is literally 5 minutes for me in a car, and I'll listen in solitude and enjoy without, the music
without interruptions
at a volume that I can choose and enjoy peace and tranquility when I then go home.
Okay. Speaking about music, okay, you don't have a fancy hi-fi system at home, but do you obviously listen to music on a regular basis?
Oh, absolutely.
We would like to conclude this interview with a question that we ask everyone that comes to our podcast, and which is, what is the music? It can be a song, an artist, an album that you can't get out of your head and that you've been listening on repeat.
Okay. So actually, I'm one of these people that once I find something, I'll just play it and play it and play it and play it and play it until I get
perfect.
Sick and tired of it, and then I won't listen to it probably ever again. And in terms of music, I listen to a vast genre of music. So literally everything from classical to, I wouldn't say heavy rock, but that's pushing the senses too far. But all sorts of music. One of the worst things I almost hate going to is dealer events, where they'll put a record on that I've not heard of, and I'll think, wow, that's amazing. God, that's good. So I'm straight onto Amazon and I'm like, buy that record. So my wife hates it if I go away and to do a dealer event, because in the post come like six LPs or something. In terms of music, I mean, I listen to most music probably like most people in the car when you're driving along.
Yeah.
So dare I say it's streaming, what have you. And I've got to say, at the moment, for the past few weeks, I've been listening to Taylor Swift.
All right.
Because it's not Patricia Barber or the Brubeck Quartet or things like that, but it's particularly if you're driving.
The last album? The latest album, or
no, actually, I think, is it 1989?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm in the car, I'm listening to it, I'm on Amazon, and it's just on a Taylor Swift playlist, so it's a whole load of different things, and you can just drive and almost switch off, and it's just there. It's pretty much a beat that's going on in the background, and things like that. Sometimes I'll listen to trance music when I'm driving along. Tend to drive a little bit quicker then, I must admit. But sometimes...
It's good for not falling asleep.
Absolutely. But in the office, I have a hi-fi system in my office, and I tend to listen to, I stream a music channel called Smooth Chill. It's pretty much repetitive type of soothing music, which is nice in the background.
Yeah.
And classical music I'll listen to while I'm working, because it's not very intrusive, and it's calming rather than, say, AC/DC or Motorhead, something like that.
Yeah.
So I think, depending on what I'm doing and where I am and things like that, I think it's good. But all music, I think, has its place, and it is very, very good. And, you know, there'll be lots of people that will probably watch this podcast and go, Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
Well, interesting, Taylor Swift is now a billionaire, and there's only one reason she's a billionaire, because she sold a lot of records.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
So
do you dance as well?
No. But I am a big fan.
Yeah.
I became a Swiftie, like,
oh, wow. Okay.
Like people say, like last year with my kids, I went to the movie theater to watch her Eras Tour concert.
Oh, okay. Yes.
On the cinema.
Yes.
And it was amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah.
Like a 3 hours concert, I mean.
Yeah.
Not non-stop.
And I think with a lot of concerts these days, so it's very interesting because how the whole music industry has changed is that years ago, people would go on tour to sell their albums.
Yeah.
And that's how they'd make their money, selling albums. And now they're making the money from concert tours.
From concerts.
And
yep.
albums are there almost to supplement it. Now, I think record sales are much better for making profit, hence Taylor Swift now being super rich. Downloads and things were, you know, killing that part of the industry.
For sure. Yeah.
But I think where a lot of pop groups have realized is that when they go and play to their fans and their audience, they need to make a proper show. Hmm. Now, wasn't my musical taste, but I accompanied someone to go to see AC/DC in Wembley, and it was very disappointing. You know, the light show was not very good at all. The sound quality wasn't very good. Mm. It was not good at all. Mm. I had the opportunity, I went to Vienna to see Coldplay, and within 5 seconds, it is jaw-dropping. It is unbelievable, okay? Anyone who has the luck to go and see one of their shows, it is simply phenomenal. Just as a whole spectacle, and
because it's more than just the music.
It's more than just music. They can get a bit on their soapbox preaching about how to save the planet and things like that. And I think, you know, they need to realise that we go there to listen to their music, not some political comment. But yes, it's a spectacle, and probably the same like the Taylor Swift concert. Yeah. You know, people are in awe of what they see, and
it's
they
like a
hear.
Religious experience.
Exactly, yeah. And that then obviously makes you more inclined to buy their records and all the rest of it, which is a good thing. Yeah. So,
Konrad, it was a pleasure.
Thank you
for having here. Hopefully we'll see new products and good things coming out
absolutely.
Of Avid. And we should also welcome your products to Portugal,
yes.
that are now being distributed by Exaudio, where we are today.
Thank you, Konrad.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure seeing you all. Yeah.
Ciao.